Today is Wednesday, October the 9th. I'm Hank Key. Welcome to the award-winning Personal Computer Show. Hurricane storms Helene and Milton have destroyed whole communities in the southeastern United States. You can make a difference. Help people affected by Hurricanes Helene and Milton by donating to the American Red Cross. They have launched a massive relief effort to support those affected by the hurricanes. You can play a vital role in helping those affected by Hurricanes Helene and Milton to recover and rebuild their lives. Your donations will help deliver essential services and supplies to those in need. Big Tech has been collecting and aggregating your personal data. Do you know how big tech companies and our government are using your personal data? We have been bringing computer news, hardware and software reviews, guest interviews, and news of user group meetings for the past 40-plus years. The Personal Computer Show is a 3-time winner of the prestigious National Computer Press Awards. Our only advocacies are consumerism and the First Amendment. I welcome you, the listeners, to provide feedback as to what you want to hear. Address your suggestions to Hank at pcradioshow.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.live. That's PRN.live, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on PRN.live on the Internet. You can leave us a message with your questions or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. Windows 11 version 24H2 is a full operating system swap. Microsoft rolling out what it's calling a full operating system swap that seems to have paved the way for artificial intelligence. Windows 11 24H2 has some surprising new features included in the update. There's Wi-Fi 7 support, a refresh button for Wi-Fi networks along with a scan progress indicator to help you find the networks you need. Clear labels in the context menu indicate actions such as cut, copy, paste, rename, share, and delete, simplifying your daily task. The ability to easily drag files between breadcrumbs in the File Explorer address bar. Sudo for Windows. In the Task Manager, the units for DDR speed have been updated from megahertz to MTS for more accurate readings. This full operating system swap seems to be primarily about AI, as Microsoft kicks off its exposition by saying it contains new foundational elements required to deliver transformational AI experiences and exceptional performance. Microsoft does also state that it's about enhancing connectivity with the introduction of Wi-Fi 7, boosting productivity with new quick settings, and improving accessibility with advanced assistive hearing devices support. Plus, it introduces energy-saving features that extend battery life and reduce energy consumption. Windows 11 24H2 will roll out slowly, opening up to more and more people over time, depending on how Microsoft judges different devices to fare with the update, amongst other things. Despite the associated backlash, 24H2 will also push forward with Windows Recore, the Black Mirror-esque software that aims to record everything you do on your computer for your AI-enhanced search and recall convenience. It will be available to Windows Insider participants. You should be able to turn the feature off, though, even though you won't be able to uninstall it. In addition to Recore, 24H2 will also push tons of other AI enhancements to various applications and system settings, such as Co-Creator in Paint, Image Creator in Microsoft Photos, and Auto Super Resolution for OS level, and AI-aided upscaling. Tesla is shifting their focus to hydrogen power. Electric vehicles, that's EV pioneer and founder of the multi-billion dollar enterprise Tesla, Elon Musk has announced in June earlier this year a shocking transition of the company. Tesla is a leader in innovating EVs. It is therefore a shock, to say the least, that Musk has stated that the company will be shifting their focus to hydrogen power, once the dumbest fuel, now a fuel of the future. Musk has previously stated his criticisms toward hydrogen as an energy storage. In a TV interview, he stated that hydrogen fuel is the dumbest thing. However, increasing competition from China's BYD EVs, decision was most likely a strategic move to remain competitive as EVs become more prevalent on the road. Hydrogen fuel cell technology is also being explored by China and Japan. By developing and exploring fuel cell technology, it is not only an inevitable decision, but will diversify Tesla's product offerings and keep them ahead as automobile leaders. The possibilities of fuel cell technology are incredibly lucrative. Not only are there zero emissions from hydrogen energy with a byproduct of only water, but it would open up a world of possibility of harnessing pure hydrogen to keep in line with eco-friendly goals. The first fuel cell power car is expected to debut in 2026. Not only is a hydrogen exploration a surprise, but a review date for their first model is fast approaching. Tesla has set an ambitious date for the release of their first hydrogen power car by 2026. The model has been dubbed Model H and will use advanced fuel cell technology. Tesla plans on advancing and solving problems with storing hydrogen and its associated infrastructure. Currently, there are less than 17,000 hydrogen fuel cell vehicles in the United States, with all of them being in California. California is the only U.S. state with a network of retail hydrogen fueling stations. To make hydrogen power cars more prevalent, new infrastructure will have to be developed to support the novel technology. Previously, Honda, Hyundai, and Toyota were the only companies with hydrogen-powered commercial vehicles available. How does a hydrogen fuel cell vehicle actually work? The electric motor in a hydrogen fuel cell car is the same technology which is used in EVs to turn the wheels of a car. The difference is, instead of being powered by a battery, hydrogen fuel cell vehicles are powered by fuel cell stack where pure hydrogen passes through a membrane to combine with oxygen from the air. This produces electricity to turn the wheels. Water vapor is the only byproduct of the process. Drivers would need to refill their vehicles with carbon fiber high-pressure tanks at hydrogen fueling stations. The trouble is, to create the pure hydrogen to power the fuel cell, we would need to use a considerable amount of energy to harness this hydrogen from a compound. Pure hydrogen by itself is very difficult to find in nature. We usually find it bonded to another element, as it has a strong propensity to bind with anything. This makes it such a good energy carrier. This cracking process, however, would release carbon dioxide as a byproduct. The possibility of a hydrogen technology are attractive, but there is still a long ways to go with regards to a vehicle running on hydrogen only. Toyota's current hydrogen vehicles incorporate a battery to help the car accelerate. Hydrogen power works best at constant speed and not off of differing magnitudes of speed which a commercial vehicle commands. Tesla has long dominated the EV market with their innovative and futuristic technology. Tesla is sure to contribute significantly to hydrogen fuel cell technology. We may see a pure hydrogen-powered vehicle on the road sooner than we think. The Amazon Go Store. It looks like Amazon has finally realized most people go to grocery and convenience stores to browse and shop, not to be wowed by technology. Case in point, Amazon is closing more of its futuristic cashierless convenience shops and launching mini Whole Foods stores that are comparatively low-tech. When Amazon opened its first Go store to the public in 2018, it touted the grab-and-go, just-walk-out technology as the future of shopping. Amazon had opened as many as 28 Go stores by early 2023, but it has been winnowing that number down with its latest closure of 3 New York shops, leaving just 17 Go locations. An Amazon spokesperson said the company couldn't make the economics work at the newly shuttered New York shops. Amazon has given up altogether on using the checkout technology in bigger stores in the United States, removing Just Walk Out from dozens of Amazon Fresh grocery stores earlier this year. The Amazon spokesperson said the company is committed to the Amazon Go format and noted that Just Walk Out is now in over 190 locations operated by other retailers in settings like airports and stadiums. But Amazon also isn't using the technology in a new, smaller version of Whole Foods called the Daily Shop that it plans to roll out nationwide. Amazon's first Daily Shop location is a 9,100-square-foot Manhattan store that opened last month, does manage to squeeze in old-school grocery attractions like a juice and coffee bar, and displays the fresh produce and seasonal items. In a Grocery Dive interview today, senior Amazon grocery executive Christina Minardi said grocery stores become very restricted when using Just Walk Out. It takes weeks to adjust product displays because Just Walk Out has to map them. Minardi said, giving the example of adding a new mozzarella display. Whole Foods must try to Just Walk Out again if the technology improves, Minardi said. Those are the kinds of complaints about Just Walk Out clunkiness. And also heard are hushed tones from Amazon staff and retail rivals, not from executives in on-the-record interviews. Back in 2012, Jeff Bezos said Amazon would only open physical retail stores if it could come up with a truly differentiated idea. While Just Walk Out may be truly differential, it does not look like it will be the future of Amazon's retail stores. Whatever happened to return to office? Return to office was a frequent topic of conversation among political leaders and business executives as New York City struggled to put the pandemic behind. Then, over the summer, the phrase seemed to disappear. Its three-letter abbreviation appeared in the New York Times only four times, from June 1st to September the 30th. The words, return to office, appeared only five times in the context of employers, employees, and workplaces over those 4 months. Estimates of office attendance vary widely. Catherine Waldie, the president of the Partnership for New York City, said attendance had stabilized at probably about 75% of what it was before the pandemic. A survey of foot traffic in 1,000 office buildings across the country put the figure for August in New York even higher, at 84.1%. By contrast, a company that tracks swipes when company issue cards are used to open turnstiles in office buildings found that attendance at offices in New York was 52.7% during the week of September the 18th. But another company that keeps tabs on swipes said there had been a surge of more than 18% in office attendance since Labor Day, potentially signaling a change in leasing patterns and a hopeful note for commercial real estate. Whatever the numbers are right now, more office workers could be taking their places at their desk before long. Last month, Amazon ordered workers to return to their offices 5 days a week by January the 2nd. The company has already required its staff to be on hand at least 3 days a week. Companies in other sectors have also pushed for a return to pre-COVID norms, with financial powerhouses like J.P. Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs leading the parade. There is a sense the pendulum swung way too far in the opposite direction. The office is super optional. Zach Dunn, co-founder of the workplace management platform, Robin, told the New York Times last month. James Perrott, director of economics and fiscal policies at the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School, echoed that idea. Employers have not thrown in the towel on getting people to come back to the office, he said. And because there has been no meaningful employment growth in industries like finance, technology, and media, there are fewer openings at other companies than there were a couple of years ago, he said. Consequently, workers have fewer options if they go job hunting and are more susceptible to company requirements or company demands that they return to the office to a greater extent, he said. The city said a year ago that it had recovered the 946,000 private sector jobs that were lost in the pandemic, more than a year ahead of some predictions. But Perot noted that many of the jobs in the city's tallies were in lower-paying fields like home health care and social services that do not involve working in offices. Amazon five-day office mandate sparks debate. The work-from-home era is coming to an end for many tech workers, and Amazon is at the center of this shift. The company's recent decision to enforce a five-day in-office work week has sparked major reaction among employees, with many expressing deep dissatisfaction. Amazon's new policy, which requires employees to return to the office 5 days a week starting in January 2025, is facing heavy resistance. A survey conducted by Blind, a job review portal, reveals that 73% of Amazon employees are thinking about quitting due to this mandate. This poll, which involved 2,585 verified Amazon workers, were taken shortly after CEO Andy Jassy's announcement about return-to-office policy. Although the rule is still over a year away, many employees are already seeking other job opportunities. Some worry what they will lose the work-life balance they enjoyed during the work-from-home period. Is mass resignation could be ahead? According to the survey, a significant number of Amazon employees are either actively looking for new jobs or know colleagues who have already left due to the policy. More than one-third of the respondents said they personally know someone who quit over this issue. Reports from Fortune support these findings, showing that many Amazon workers are rage applying for jobs with more flexible arrangements. Despite this, Amazon has not publicly addressed the growing dissatisfaction among its employees. Amazon's decision to enforce a strict in-office policy has raised concerns beyond the company itself. Many fear that other tech giants could follow suit, ending the flexibility that remote work has provided. According to Blind Survey, over 90% of Amazon workers oppose the new in-office rule, and employees from other companies like Google and AT&T have also expressed concerns. The fear of losing remote work options has grown, particularly as companies like Dell have introduced similar mandates, requiring the sales staff to work in the office 5 days a week. Interestingly, while Amazon and Dell push for full-time office presence, the broader trend in the tech industry leans towards hybrid work models. The Flex Index, which tracks office requirements for over 9,000 companies, shows that 37% of U.S. employers now offer hybrid work setups, up from 20% at the start of 2023. In fact, only a third of companies still maintain strict five-day in-office requirements, and many are easing their return-to-office policies as they face strong opposition from employees. Amazon's decision to mandate office attendance could have long-lasting effects on its recruitment efforts, according to the Blind Survey. Many job candidates are pulling out of Amazon's hiring process because of the return-to-office rule. Amazon recruiters are struggling to fill positions as candidates are reluctant to give up the remote work flexibility they currently enjoy. In the current economic climate, candidates are turning down job offers, making it more difficult for Amazon to attract top talent. The shift towards remote work has made freedom and flexibility key priorities for many employees, and Amazon's policy may be at odds with these expectations. Amazon's decision to enforce a five-day work week is clashing with the industry's broader preference for remote or hybrid work. While it remains uncertain whether Amazon will adjust its policies in response to the backlash, continuing on this path could lead to losing valuable talent. In the coming months, Amazon may face significant challenges as it grapples with disgruntled employees, tougher recruitment processes, and an industry that increasingly favors flexible work arrangements.
Presenting the IT Pro Series with Benjamin Rockwell.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and a lot of how that all intertwines. an interesting thing happened just recently. A young lady by the name of Courtney Summer Myers was on LinkedIn. She had up the Open to Work banner, hashtag Open to Work. It's a little green banner that goes right along your photo, and it says that, hey, you're looking for a job. And she felt, okay, she had enough feedback from people that were making her feel ashamed for openly asking for help and getting a job on a platform, LinkedIn, that is designed to connect people with new jobs. So what did she do? She put up hashtag desperate in a very nice cute pink that matches up with her her top. So it's an amazing graphic that really highlights one of the biggest controversies I think that we've got going on right now with people who are looking for new jobs. And yes, that's getting her a lot of attention, and I thought I'd take a moment to talk about the idea of why Open to Work seems to be controversial. And yes, okay, yeah, in some regards, yeah, it could make you look quote-unquote desperate. There's a certain stigma that is attached to this, and people may consider this as some kind of a level of desperation, some kind of level of this person is going to be hard to employ or whatever. I don't think Courtney Summer Myers is going to think that. I mean, it was whimsical. She was just having fun with it while trying to find a job. And I think that shows promise for her. And there are people who say, okay, yeah, there's a potential for somebody on your LinkedIn that you work with seeing that. And that is going to draw negative attention to you at work, and it's going to have perhaps your manager say, hey, why are you looking for a new job? Or whatever else there is that goes along with that. And yeah, I get those kinds of negative connotations that may come with it. I've struggled with it. In the last time I was looking for a job, I was sitting there and I was going, okay, do I want to put myself as open to work or not? And I actually chose not to, because I was looking for a very specific realm of work that I do, and I was looking to be a little bit more selective, and I was already getting bombarded by all kinds of people looking for exactly what I have. But I will tell you, if you are looking for a job, if you've gotten to that point where you say, yeah, I'm ready to jump ship, or maybe you're already looking for a job because you don't have a current one, I'm going to tell you, there are very few downsides in my view to this. A, you've got the increased visibility. Yes, there are going to be people who are going to be going through all of these profiles, and it may be somebody that you used to work with. It may be somebody that maybe you used to work for, and they see, okay, hey, they're open to work, they're looking for something, and we'd really like to work with them. We'd like to have them back. That is something very good in itself. It's moving you towards that next job. It's showing that you're serious. It's showing that you're not just hopping out there and you're just looking for interviews to keep your skills fresh. It's not going to identify you as somebody who's going to be a time waster, but somebody who's ready to jump ship and move along. That also means it's speeding things up. It means you're ready to leave your current job. It means that you're ready to go through the hiring process as quickly as you can. It is a neon sign. And you know what? There's a reason why neon signs are so good for so many businesses. You might as well take advantage of that. Also, whenever you're doing something like that, when you're setting up yourself on LinkedIn or any of these other platforms and you're advertising, you're pushing the idea that, yes, I'm looking for a job, that means you're also going to be open to jobs that aren't going to be listed up on LinkedIn. They're not going to be advertised. It is setting you up as a potential person to look at. Hey, what are the skills and qualifications this person has? What do they look like? Maybe there's a way we can fit them in. We can put them in our company. Maybe not doing exactly what you've got a skill set for, but something adjacent. There's a lot of different things all the way along. And I'll tell you, last but not least, is the amount of support that you're going to get from people that you are working, that you are linked up with, that you've already had as friends throughout. I'll tell you, all of those different recruiters that you're linked in with, all of those different people that you've got throughout your entire contact list, that is going to be a highlight for them. They're going to see that. And maybe it'll be a week from now. Maybe it'll be 2 weeks from now. Look, I do not consider any kind of advertising, any kind of branding, any kind of pushing you forward towards your next job as being a negative. Yeah, there might be a couple of people who are naysayers out there. And I've heard touched on them, and I don't think listening to them, anybody who's holding you back, listening to them is going to still hold you back. So go for it. Post it up there. Hashtag open to work. Quick note, I'm not open to work right now. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. Intel now holds the Windows battery life crown. A new era in Windows computing is here. Built around Microsoft's Copilot Plus PC initiative and a few new chipsets. While the most hype is around artificial intelligence capabilities and performance thanks to faster neural processing units with the acronym NPUs, the biggest changes today are in performance and battery life. And that's a good thing for Windows because the platform has been struggling against Apple Silicon MacBooks that have been very good performance and much better efficiency. The new chipsets include Qualcomm's Snapdragon X, AMD's Ryzen AI 300, and Intel's Lunar Lake. Each chipset has an NPU that exceeds Microsoft's 40 tera operations per second with the acronym TOPS, T-O-P-S, requirement. But while AMD focuses on performance, both Qualcomm and Intel are focused on efficiency. So how does each chipset rank? None of them make for good gaming or creator laptops unless they feature discrete graphics. AI performance with a faster NPU just aren't there yet, and discrete GPUs will be the performance champs regardless. With NPUs offering more efficient on-device AI rather than super-fast AI performance. Right now, AMD is in the lead among the chipsets. The Ryzen AI 9HX370 chipset is very fast at CPU-intensive tasks, particularly in its multi-core performance. The Qualcomm Snapdragon X Elite comes in a close second. Intel's Core Ultra 7 285V comes in last place. But notably, it's essentially a low-power version of the Lunar Lake lineup, and it's a lot stronger in efficiency than shared performance. The Ryzen AI 9HX370 chipset has 12 cores and 24 threads, running up to 5.1 GHz. It's a 28-watt chip that's configurable between 15 watts and 54 watts, making it the most power-hungry of the new chipsets. Its 12 cores are apportioned between 4 full-size Zen 5 cores and 8 Zen 5C cores that are more compact, but just as fast. So it doesn't have low-power cores. There are other versions of the chipset. The other major variant is the Ryzen AI 9-365 with 10 cores and 20 threads running up to 5 GHz. The Qualcomm Snapdragon X has several versions tested, including variations of the Snapdragon X Elite and Snapdragon X Plus chipsets. Qualcomm's thermal design power, that's TDP, varies from 23 watts for the Snapdragon X Plus to 45 watts nominal up to 80 watts for the Snapdragon X Elite. The efficiency with these chips is apparently highly variable based on how demanding the task is in a way that Lunar Lake and Apple's M3 chipsets are not. Intel's Lunar Lake also has several iterations with the Core Ultra 5 and 7 series, two versions running at a base TDP of 17 watts and Core Ultra 9 Series 2 at a base TDP of 30 watts. Each chipset is configurable between 17 watts and 37 watts. Lunar Lake is the most direct replacement for Intel's U-Series Meteor Lake chipsets that run at 15 watts. Lunar Lake does succeed in being more efficient. It's important to mention Apple's M3 chipset as well, given that it's performance efficiency leader that these Windows chipsets, at least Intel's and Qualcomm's, are aimed at defeating. The base M3, which comes in both 8-core CPU, 8-core GPU, and 8-core 10-core GPU versions. The M3 offers a very solid combination of performance and efficiency. When it comes to battery life, efficiency is the name of the game, at least for Qualcomm and Intel. That's where Apple Silicon has led the way and where Windows laptops have lagged the most. Looking at early results, it looks like Intel's Lunar Lake might indeed win out against Qualcomm's Snapdragon X, but not quite against Apple's M3, and the M4 likely is to be even more efficient. For now, Windows laptops have never been better, and Intel's mostly leading that charge when it comes to the important element of battery life. Astronomers challenging lunar origin story. Everything we thought we knew about the moon's origin may be wrong, new research suggests. Ever since we landed the first humans on the moon, scientists have thought that our lone lunar companion formed in the wake of violent collision between Earth and another rocky planet. However, according to a new paper in the Planetary Science Journal, the moon might actually have been stolen, snatched out of space from the orbit of another celestial body during a close encounter. The collision theory, also known as the giant impact hypothesis, proposes that the moon was created from the debris of massive collision between the early Earth and Mars-sized protoplanet, often referred to as Theia. This impact is thought to have been so energetic that it vaporized part of both Earth and Theia, ejecting vast amounts of material into space, which, under the force of gravity, eventually coalesced into the moon. This theory was developed after the Apollo missions to account for several key observations about the moon's composition. For example, analysis of moon rock revealed that it was calcium-rich and basaltic, similar to that of the bulk composition of Earth's mantle, and both had similar isotopic fingerprints. In addition, the moon's orbit had a similar orientation to Earth's axis of rotation. At the Kona Conference in Hawaii back in 1984, planetary scientists from around the world agreed that the moon likely resulted from a collision around 4.5 billion years ago. The Kona Conference set the narrative for 40 years, study co-author Darren Williams, a professor of astronomy and astrophysics at Penn State, said in a statement. Now, however, researchers from Penn State suggest that the moon may have instead been captured during a close flyby of another rocky object in the early solar system. Swiping the moon from its orbit around the other body is something known as binary exchange capture. This is because the moon appears to orbit in a different place than where it should if it had been formed from debris after collision, as that would be expected to merge above the equator of the planet. The moon is more in line with the sun than it is with Earth's equator, Williams said. In the paper, researchers describe how they analyze changes in the size and shape of the moon's orbit over time and determine it may indeed have been captured from another orbit. The moon is thought to have an elliptical orbit at first, which slowly became more circular as it got closer to the Earth. Over time, the moon then started to drift away from our planet out to the distance where it orbits today. Today, the Earth tide is ahead of the moon, Williams said. High tide accelerates the orbit. It gives it a pulse, a little bit of boost. Over time, the moon drifts a bit further away. The moon is still moving away from us gradually, at a rate of about 1.5 inches every year. The moon is now so far away that both the sun and earth are competing for its attention, William said. Both are pulling on it. This kind of moon capture has been seen to have occurred elsewhere, with Neptune's moon Triton being suspected to have been snatched into orbit from a binary asteroid system located in the Kuiper Belt at the edge of our solar system. While this doesn't totally prove that the moon was captured rather than formed from a collision, the researchers are excited at the prospect of an alternative explanation. No one knows how the moon was formed, he said. For the last 4 decades, we have one possibility for how it got there. Now we have two. This opens a treasure trove of new questions and opportunities for further study. Why IT tech workers need a backup plan after age 40. One of the main reasons why IT engineers start considering a backup plan after age 40 is the potential career plateau. As technology evolves rapidly, it's challenging for seasoned engineers to keep up with the latest trends, especially when younger colleagues are coming in with fresh skills. Many IT engineers find that their career growth starts to slow down after a certain point. For many IT engineers, reaching age 40 is a significant milestone. It's a point in life when many professionals in the tech industry begin to think beyond the current roles and start planning for the future. The fast-paced nature of the IT sector, combined with the age-related factors, often pushes engineers to have a Plan B ready. But why is this the case? One of the main reasons why IT engineers start considering a backup plan after age 40 is the potential career plateau. As technology evolves rapidly, it's challenging for seasoned engineers to keep up with the latest trends, especially when younger colleagues are coming in with fresh skills. Many IT engineers find that their career growth starts to slow down after a certain point. Job roles become repetitive, and promotions can be harder to come by. This leads to professionals exploring alternative career paths or side ventures. The IT industry is notorious for long hours and high stress, which can take a toll on both physical and mental health. By the age of 40, many engineers have spent years working in high-pressure environments, often leading to burnout or health issues. As a result, they begin considering less stressful or physically demanding jobs that allow for better work-life balance. Having a Plan B helps them transition into a less taxing role if health problems arise. Then there's a fear of job insecurity in the IT industry. The IT industry is highly competitive and ever-changing. Companies frequently undergo restructuring, and outsourcing or automation can lead to job cuts. Engineers in their 40s might face increased competition from younger, more adaptable talent, making job security a significant concern. To combat this, many IT professionals start preparing for alternative career options to ensure financial stability in case of layoffs or sudden career shifts. It could be the desire for entrepreneurial pursuits. Many IT engineers harbor dreams of entrepreneurship. By the time they reach age 40, they often have the financial security and industry knowledge needed to venture into their own businesses or startups. Starting a side business or exploring freelance opportunities can provide a safety net and give them the flexibility they desire in their careers. Or they may want to seek work-life balance and personal goals. At age 40, many IT engineers have families and personal goals that require more time and attention. The demanding nature of the IT industry can make it difficult to maintain a healthy work-life balance. A Plan B allows them to transition to roles that provide more flexibility, enabling them to spend more time with their families or pursue personal passions without compromising their professional lives. For IT engineers, having a backup plan after age 40 is often driven by a combination of career stagnation, health concerns, job insecurity, and a desire for greater work-life balance. Whether it's starting their own business, shifting to a less stressful life, or preparing for unexpected changes in industry, having a Plan B is a proactive step towards securing their future in an ever-evolving field. Are techies prepared for the skills demands of 2025? Artificial intelligence and machine learning are revolutionizing how we interact with technology. Understanding these concepts will be crucial for techies. From automating routine tasks to enhancing data analysis, artificial intelligence and machine learning can significantly improve efficiency. Techies should focus on learning how to develop, implement, and manage artificial intelligence solutions to remain competitive. As we approach 2025, the technology landscape is rapidly changing. Techies must equip themselves with the right skills to thrive in this dynamic environment. Understanding the emerging trends and demands of the industry will help professionals stay ahead. Here's a look at the skills that will be essential for techies in the coming years. Artificial intelligence, AI, and machine learning, ML. AI and ML are revolutionizing how we interact with technology. Understanding these concepts will be crucial for techies. From automating routine tasks to enhancing data analysis, AI and ML can significantly improve efficiency. Techies should focus on learning how to develop, implement, and manage AI solutions to remain competitive. There's also a need for cybersecurity skills. With an increase in cyber threats, cybersecurity is a top priority for businesses. Techies need to develop strong cybersecurity skills to protect sensitive data and systems. This includes understanding risk assessment, threat detection, and incident response. Professionals who can implement robust security measures will be in high demand. There's also a need for cloud computing expertise. Cloud computing continues to reshape how businesses operate. Techies should be familiar with various cloud services and platforms, such as AWS, Microsoft Azure, and Google Cloud. Knowledge of cloud architecture, deployment, and management will be valuable as companies increasingly rely on cloud solutions. Techies with this expertise will be sought after. There's also the field of data analysis and data science. Data is a crucial asset for any organization. Techies who can analyze and interpret data effectively will play a significant role in decision-making processes. Skills in data visualization, statistical analysis, and data mining will be essential. Learning tools like Python, R, and SQL can enhance the techie ability to work with data. Then, of course, there's soft skills. While technical skills are essential, soft skills cannot be overlooked. They are communication, teamwork, and problem-solving abilities are vital for techies to collaborate effectively with others. The ability to explain complex technical concepts in simple terms will enhance teamwork and ensure projects run smoothly, and the need to have adaptability and lifelong learning. The tech industry is constantly evolving, making adaptability a crucial skill. Techies must be willing to learn continuously and embrace new technologies. This mindset will enable them to pivot when necessary and remain relevant in their careers. Online courses, workshops, and networking events can provide valuable learning opportunities. As we look towards 2025, techies must focus on developing a mix of technical and soft skills to succeed. Embracing AI, cybersecurity, cloud computing, data analysis, and strong communication abilities will prepare them for the future. By investing in their skills and being adaptable, techies can thrive in an ever-changing industry. The future is bright for those who are willing to learn and grow. Presenting Technology Chatter with Benjamin Rockwell and Marty Winston.
Marty Winston joins me now. What do you have for me this week, Marty? For us, all of us. There's a bunch of us. Seven, eight, nine.
What a great idea. How about Christmas?
Christmas is a little ways off, but all right, go on.
Not that long. And as everyone knows, if you've decided the one thing you really want to give somebody, If you wait much longer than now, it's gone. They're out of stock. So let's start thinking now
about
things to give for Christmas that are not just indulgent.
Yeah.
But helpful.
You're spoiling all my fun. The indulgent is what I really enjoy.
I'm not talking about what you get. I'm talking about what you give.
That too. But all right.
Well, okay.
On.
All right. Everybody, he's a grandpa. He's
yes,
not
I
thinking
am.
Of anybody but the little kid. So,
yep,
you know.
Yeah.
There's no way to stop a grandpa from spoiling anybody.
Yeah. Very true.
So what will you give for Christmas? And every age is involved in answering that question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kids, depending on where you live, may want some more fun way to cope with the local weather.
Okay.
So think about what December, January, February weather is like.
Okay.
And use that as part of your thinking. Now, is it tech or not? And the answer is, don't even think about that. It's about what's right for the person, not how it's put together. It's never been about what goes into the product.
Mm-hmm,
it's
mm-hmm.
always about what the user gets out of the product. So,
sure, yeah.
Right? So let's think about spouses.
Yeah.
Right? First question, why do they hate you so much?
I don't know. I've been trying to figure that out for some 35 years. No, we get along quite well. I should.
Yes, should yes, you do.
That. Yes.
And do you want to thank her for it?
Yes. Yeah.
So what would, you know, hint number one, a vacuum cleaner sucks as a gift.
Yes. Very much so.
And iron is not a hot idea.
No, and neither are iron pans.
Right, and cookware?
Cookware's out.
Let's not take anything that's a chore or that's work.
Mm-hmm,
Is there a hobby? Now, for a woman, there are two obvious hobbies. One is eating chocolate, and the other is wearing shoes.
Mm-hmm. My wife has both of those. She also has collecting knives.
That's very interesting.
And that actually... The off-the-beaten-track hobbies are typically what I would suggest for people.
I think that's brilliant because you personalize the gift in selecting it and even knowing where to shop for
it. Yes, yes.
A lot of people, you're quite aware of this, and it might even reflect our youth, would go to an electronics store, find something interesting that you think they really should enjoy, and get it for them. They really wanted another alarm clock or a talking time cube or what have you.
Yes, yes.
You're not giving it to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So for Christmas, for holiday shopping, no matter if it's Christmas or any other, I think the guideline is number one, don't decide what you like.
Right.
Don't think about, I'm going to give it to them, but I'm going to use it too. No. Off the table. That's not there.
I got over that when I was about 11 or 12.
Yeah. Number two.
Maybe 13.
Number
14?
Two.
Yeah, go on.
Keep your antenna up anytime you're in a store.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even care if it's a grocery store. There might be something there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
The idea of kind of free associating. Of looking at, and it might lead you somewhere else. You might be at a store of strange stuff and see a Christmas Story leg lamp and think, well, that'd be cool, and it won't. But unless your
wife really, that's her favorite movie.
Yeah, I guess that.
Or whoever, the gift recipient. Yeah.
Yeah, that might be the case. But then again, maybe tickets to the movies for a year.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe DVDs of some of her all-time favorite films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That she doesn't already have. Maybe movie posters if they like the themes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just movies. In food, don't count on what people like today ever being liked again. There's no constancy to it. And, you know, they like oysters, so I'm going to get them oyster spoons. Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, really good luck with that. I made a face. Marty saw it. You didn't. But there we go. Yes.
So Christmas, I mean, we all wait too long to go to Christmas thinking.
Yes.
And when we get there, we're rushed, we're stressed, we try to go to one good answer we can have right away and be done with it. But Christmas is more about being thoughtful, and thought takes time.
It does. It does. Plan it out.
Yeah. So at this early juncture, yeah, could we run this segment Christmas week? We could.
That'd be a little bit late for most people, yes.
What a disservice that would be. And don't count on Amazon same-day deliveries to save you this year.
Very true.
Decide what is special to them, the kids, the parents, the relatives, the friends, the neighbors. Decide what they like and what you can do. It may be as simple as gift wrapping a jar of cherry jam, if that's what they like. So, happy holidays.
Happy holidays. There we go. That's the voice of Marty Santa Claus Winston. This is Benjamin the Elf Rockwell. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin, and thank you, Marty. Public service announcements. Computer club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. Log on to the club website for more information on remote meeting ID. The New York Amateur Computer Club meets Thursday, October the 10th. Meeting time is 7 p.m., online virtual meeting via Zoom, and the website is nyacc.org. The Long Island Macintosh Users Group meets Friday, October the 11th. Meeting time is 7 p.m., online virtual meeting via Zoom, and their website is limac.org. The Brookdale Computer Users Group meets Thursday, October the 24th. Meeting time is 6:45 p.m., online virtual meeting, and the website is bcug.com. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey meets Friday, November the 1st. Meeting time is 8 p.m., online virtual meeting via Jitsi. Website is acgnj.org. The Tech Ed Connect Computer Club meets Tuesday, November the 5th, which is Election Day. Meeting time is 7 p.m. and is Zoom only because the library is unavailable for Election Day. Online virtual meeting via Zoom, and the website is wpcug.org. The King's Byte Computer Club meets Tuesday, November 5th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. They meet at the Park Plaza Restaurant at 220 Cadman Plaza West in Brooklyn. For more information, the phone number is 347-278-7320. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN, live streaming on the Internet. Podcast of the program is available on prn.live on the Internet. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to hank@pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Michael Horowitz, Benjamin Rockwell, and Marty Winston, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station next week.